Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Okay, yet another episode of Enough About Me. I'm like an animal. Like, does it ever end? I mean, can I stop working? I think there's vacation is needed at this point with summer looming. Good week so far of podcasts. Obviously, you guys have been great. The feedback's been unbelievable. The numbers have been really good. The thing is, you know, it's, and we'll see what happens, you know, going forward. Maybe we'll run out of guests. I don't know. Maybe we'll stop. You know, I think there's going to be, at some point, I'm trying to think of a way to say this diplomatically, so I don't know how to do that with this. I think there's concern in the company, maybe, about me being live in any format seems to be a concern. That's more speculative than with knowledge on my part, but it just feels that way right now. They think, well, he could do a podcast, do whatever he wants. You know, not even that could be controlled, but it's sort of less dangerous. And I don't know, and I've seen tweets today and stuff. I don't know if it's better or worse. I don't know if a live show, like the idea of doing 4 hours live every day is, I have no desire to do that anymore. I don't. I was just talking to my former partner today, and he was saying, tell me again that, you know, you miss this and da da da. And I tell him I don't, and he doesn't want to believe me, and I don't miss going on for 4 hours. I do miss, and maybe Mark Morosa, if he gets the job, and Brian Riccio from last week, and Alyssa Klein, who was the film critic lady, Captain Marvel, was kind of fun. And even the guy who I'm going to talk to later this week, or this religious guy, Andrew Beckwith, you know, these are going to be characters potentially. I'm not sure. I'm still trying to figure out how to weave them in. And can you do that in a podcast world versus a live radio world? I don't know. Can you make a live podcast go with a sort of a little bit of fun for 10 or 15 minutes and get into an interview for a while? I don't know. I'm still working through that. Right now, it's still very much the traditional sort of Enough About Me format, which is this little monologue here, guest out, which is good. I enjoy it. I really do enjoy it. I just would like to somehow incorporate some of the other stuff. Like talking to Morosa yesterday felt a little bit like the old days beating up on my old producers. It felt fun and fast and indifferent, you know, and that is something that I miss, and I'm still figuring out how to incorporate all that stuff while also booking these people and finding stuff and doing. I mean, again, I'm not killing myself here, but it's an interesting thing that's going on, and it's fun actually in a way to try and figure it out. Like, it's nice to know also, and I've said this before, that you're not, you know, married to having to talk about any topic at all. Like, you know, I'm sure people are doing whatever today, whatever the big national sports story is, and I couldn't be happier that I don't have to do that. I mean, that pleases me to no end. So the guest today is Mike. I'm going to get his last name wrong, and I asked him how to pronounce it too. I think it's Mike Boudet. He hosts the podcast called Sword and Scale. That was huge. And we'll talk to him about this in the interview, which is coming up. You know, one of the biggest, most downloaded podcasts in America. And it was sort of a crime one. I'm guessing a lot of you have listened to it. Very successful. He did very well. He's on the Wondery Network. Did some things that did social media and other stuff, said some stuff that, you know, were controversial. And after a while, a couple of activists began cold calling advertisers, and eventually they won and took him down. Now, this was something I had some understanding of, some familiarity with. So I thought it'd be interesting to have that discussion with somebody else who's gone through what I've gone through. And he was excellent. I really enjoyed this conversation. It's whether you agree or disagree with some of the things that Mike has said and done, and some of the things I think he shouldn't have said, and some of the things I didn't have a problem with. You know, and I think I say this in the interview. I'm actually taping this the day after the open. I'm taping the day after the interview, so I don't remember if I said it or not. the idea that you're going to just, you hear something, you don't like it on a podcast or a radio show or a television show or a movie or whatever it is, to then be done with that, hear it, and say, I'm going to start, cold calling whatever company you want that advertises. I don't even know, Kellogg's. You start calling them. It's such a weird instinct. It's such a, as opposed to just saying, you know what, I'm moving on. Okay. This guy's an asshole. Kirk Minahan's an asshole. I don't like him. I'm not going to listen to him anymore. Done. Go listen to something else. This is what I would do and have done if I don't like somebody. It's strange. And, one or two or three or four people, if you continue to barrage and know how to do it and you're good at it, can seem like a real mob. And it doesn't take the other side, the companies, the advertisers, long to say, I just don't want to deal with this anymore. And that's where we're at. I mean, if you're listening right now, if you really want to get together and try and bring somebody down in the media, you have a good chance of doing it. You got at least a 50-50 chance of doing it. If you're smart, you do it right and you take your time. So, and by the way, I'm not advocating that, of course, but I'm just saying that's where we're at right now. A scary, scary time. And Mike Boudet, I'm going to get his, if I say it wrong, Mike, just tweet at me, let me know. The long time, very successful podcast host of Sword and Scale tells his story, and it parallels to mine, I think, in a lot of ways. And I sort of continue to bring that up with him because I just, everything he said, I found myself nodding and thinking, Jesus Christ, well, at least I'm not alone. We'll have sympathy for him for having to go through it. So Mike joins me right now on Enough About Me. All right, back on Enough About Me. Mike Boudet is, we'll find out in a second, the host of Sword and Scale and a bunch of other stuff as well. He was on the Wondery network there for a while before it wasn't. And as I said in the open, Mike and I have some similar stuff. We were essentially taken down in our jobs, me and on the radio at EEI, and he had his podcast by activists, they call themselves, who harass advertisers and to the point where they just can't deal with it anymore, and then they move on, which is the world we live in. I listened to his closing episode again this morning, and he said censorship actually works. And in 2019, that is true, Mike. First of all, how's it going?
Pretty good, Kirk. Thanks
good,
for having
good,
me
good,
on.
Good, good, good. So explain, so I think a lot of I listen to it. I think a lot of my listeners do as well. Explain to me just like briefly what Sword and Scale was or is.
Sure. Well, Sword and Scale started about 5 years ago, back in 2014. It was an idea that I had for a long time. I've always been interested in podcasts ever since around 2008 when I first got into them. And I'd, toyed around with different ideas and finally landed on a pretty good idea, which was to combine the true crime genre with a podcast. And at the time, there was nothing else like it.
Hard to believe in 2019, but it's true.
Absolutely.
Right. You say it now, you're like, well, what are you talking about? But back then, it was pretty dry land, right?
Yeah, it was 9 months before the very famous podcast called Serial.
Right. Yeah, go ahead.
So it sort of took a little bit of time, but by the time Serial came out, it had gotten pretty big, and Serial just made it explode because people were looking for other shows that were in the true crime genre.
Sure. So if you saw a lot of stories were, people would Google podcasts like Serial, and yours would pop up.
Absolutely. Right. And we were one of the only ones out there. I mean, there was maybe just a handful of them at the time, and now there's one coming out every day.
Right. Feels like it. So 2014, you do that. Serial comes out. You're rolling along. It gets bigger and bigger. I mean, when's the peak of Sword and Scale? Where's the point where, so for me, because I find our story sort of similar. 2 years ago, we were number one in Boston. Our ratings were huge. I felt like that was sort of the peak of my radio career before the madness started. When do you feel like you were at that point where you're like, Jesus, this is going to be my life and my career with no real worries, for the foreseeable future? When was that?
Well, first of all, I should say it took about 2.5 years before I could, actually consider it a job.
Profitable.
So I was still working full time the whole first 2.5 years.
So what were you doing?
I've been in sort of like corporate America a long time. I've been doing internet marketing and web design.
So you're doing Sword
like
and Scale on the side. You are writing the scripts and producing them and doing. Did you have a team when you started or no?
No, it was just me for two and a half, three, actually for about 3 years, it was just me.
So you're making no money off it year one,
nothing,
or two? So when is the, when, yeah, does that, when do you start making, you know, not just enough to sort of break even, when do you start making like real, I can live off this money?
Well, you know, when you start making money, that's when people start resenting you and start attacking you.
Yes, yes.
And that happened about 2.5 years into the show. That was maybe 2016.
So late 16, okay.
Yeah. And basically, it didn't take long before the attacks began, you know, because nobody wants you to be successful in this world.
So I look at it. So sorry, Mike, and I. But so, like for my show, like the show I did, it was super controversial. You know, we talked a lot of politics. We talked a lot of guy issues. We talked a lot about the LGBT community. We just talked about stuff that would lend itself to natural controversy, and I got in a lot of trouble. When somebody says to me, "Hey, a guy who did a podcast called Sword and Scale that's sort of a true crime podcast," you look at it and say, well, you know, where's the controversy there? Like, how the hell is this guy going to get in trouble? This isn't Howard Stern. This isn't whatever. So when I look at that on its own, it doesn't make sense. But maybe you can give some context into, like, when did it start going wrong?
Well, it started going wrong pretty much shortly after that.
Okay.
Shortly after that point of monetization.
Right, okay.
Yeah, there was a few other podcasts out there that are sort of political in their leanings. They're just a little bit flagrant with what they believe and how they want the world to bend to their will.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a few threads about me that started up back then. I think most of it started around this, centered around mental illness and how people perceive it.
This is on Reddit, right? Am I wrong or no?
No, this is on private Facebook
groups of
other podcasts.
Okay. So I'm somebody, and I think you are as well, who have mental illness and mental issues, correct?
I am close to the whole mental illness thing.
So,
I'm very close. I have family members.
So I've battled it. I mean, I've talked about it on the air. I went away. I was institutionalized over this past summer for suicidal thoughts. So I've battled all this stuff as well. And by the way, I think the issues of the last year that I've gone through, you know, didn't help me get there. So I guess what was your, so like your mental illness stuff, is, am I wrong in saying that you go after somebody with mental illness? Is that what happened or no?
Well, no, I mean, not at all. But
okay.
But if you think about what the genre is and what we're doing on the show, I mean, we talk about the worst cases imaginable. We talk about cannibalism and child
people
violence.
People kill their kids and right, yes, yeah, yeah.
You know, decapitation and all
these people are all mentally ill. I mean, that's just
they would have to be.
Right,
I mean,
you would
hope that they would be. Otherwise,
by any by the definition of the term, they're mental. Like, there's no way you can do that to somebody. And by the way, and I think this is your point, doesn't excuse it, obviously. But if we're going to deal in real facts and have a real conversation, it starts with, if you're going to chop somebody's fucking head off or kill your husband or wife or kids, you're mentally fucking ill.
But that's not the narrative that this group of people like to hear. They say it stigmatizes those that are mentally ill. They want you to sort of repeat the phrase that not everybody that's mentally ill is violent.
Well, I think we know.
Yeah, no, but you have to. It's almost like a mantra that you have to repeat. And if you talk to anyone that's under this sort of belief system, they almost always repeat the same words verbatim,
so true. I know what you're saying. Exactly. Go ahead.
This is what they say. They say those that are mentally ill are more likely to be victims than they are to be perpetrators. It's almost verbatim how they repeat that. Although that is an illogical argument to what I'm saying. What I'm saying is if you're mentally ill, you're more likely to commit a violent act than if you're not. Those are two things that can live in the same world. They're not mutually exclusive.
Well, sure. I mean, I think you'd agree that, you know, the large, I'm speaking for you, but the vast majority of people who are mentally ill don't commit crimes or violent crimes, right?
Absolutely.
But
the
percentage
vast majority of people.
Right, of course. But the percentage of people who commit violent crimes, I mean, you know, if somebody goes, I mean, you know, you go up and you go shoot up Newtown, you know, you deserve to die, but you're also mentally ill. I mean, that's not even, I mean, I don't even know where the argument is in that.
Yeah, you would hope that somebody that hope there's something wrong with them psychologically.
Right, so this is interesting. So what sort of got us in some hot water initially and got the activist my old radio show going after us, you might be curious, is that it said on the air that there was a 4-year-old whose parents said that they were comfortable if he had if this child, I forget if it was a boy who's turning into a girl or a girl turning into a boy, they were comfortable having a discussion about having the actual surgery at that age. And right. we just said, you know, like, you know, I feel bad for parents that are going through it. And I know it's hard for kids, but we thought that that was just an insane way to think at 4 years old, before puberty, before this, before that. Well, that got the attention of somebody in the LGBT community, and they essentially did the same thing, that you're being anti-LGBT, you're doing this, you're doing that. We're saying, well, wait a minute. No, we're not. Like, we're talking about a four-year-old, and you can't have – the problem is, I think, with people on the extreme ends of whatever side you're on, you can't have conversations with them. They don't – you can make all the sense in the world. They don't want to hear that. They don't. They have no interest right. in hearing that. They have their lines. They have their set thing. And they just want to do one thing. And you know this as well as I do. They just want to ruin your life. That's it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I mean, I don't think there's a 4-year-old that should be making decisions about anything.
No, I mean, what color they want to use to crayon, you know, the crayon they want to use the color, or, you know, whatever. But I mean, that's it. But anyway, so this starts happening, and it's the people from, what is it, the Lore podcast, an undisclosed podcast, is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
And that's the woman. I reached out to the woman, and she's the one who's part of the Adnan Syed.
Yeah.
So, and sort of it was these two who kind of started leading the patrol. Is that right?
They fanned the fuel, the flames.
In what fashion?
They basically got the mob organized and pushed them towards the goal line, the goalpost, which was basically, here are the sponsors, here's the network, shame on this network for letting this person be on there. He's a horrible human being. He said horrible things. Somebody should do something about this. Get him kicked off. Hey, by the way, ADT, you're a sponsor. What do you think about this guy?
Casper,
he's a horrible human being.
Right.
So that's what they started on Twitter, and it worked.
Well, yeah, for us, it's kind of the same thing, and it would be, you know, whatever, client X, hey, you know, this guy said this, said that, stuff out of context, by the way, you know, this and that. And then if they didn't respond to this person, he'd email them back the next day and say, well, why aren't you responding? Are you comfortable with this language? Are you comfortable with this attitude? And after a while, and especially in podcasts, it's same as radio, like particularly the national clients who don't know you, they look at these emails after a while, and I almost don't blame them. They're like, I don't want to fucking deal with this. Like, let's...
And it looks bigger than it is.
Right, of course, if you're Casper, right, I'm just picking them as a random one, throwing some bucks at Sword and Scale, as successful as your show was, millions of downloads, they're looking at it and saying, you know what, we'll just put our money over at this podcast, and, you know, and we won't have any grief.
Right, and they took it a step further, though.
They took it
a couple of steps further. They started posting Wondery, which was the network I was on at the time. They started posting their contact information so that people on Twitter, the outraged mob, could actually start harassing the network and the people that work at the network until they got me fired.
Oh, at Wondery itself?
Yeah.
Oh, geez. So this started happening.
They docked them, basically.
Right. And if you're Wondery, and I heard you say this in your sort of farewell one, the 7 or 8 minute one, like it's almost like you want them to fight for you, but after a while, it is hard after a while to almost blame them because what are you going to do? Like, what you're trying to make a living, you're trying to make, and you have the, but what's sad is, you know, Wondery can't say to these people, they just can't say, it's sad, but it's the world we live in now. They can't say, fuck off, we like this guy, we like the podcast. The world just doesn't work that way now.
I get that, and I've never blamed Wondery. I've never blamed any of the advertisers for dropping. I blame the mentality behind, this is something that we should do.
Of course,
organize and basically form a mob and go after someone's livelihood because we didn't like the things they said. That's the problem I have. You know, I'm fine with Wondery not doing business with me, with any advertiser not doing business with me. That's fine. They don't want to take the risk. They don't want to deal with somebody that says controversial things or a controversial topic. Fine. But the idea that someone disagrees with you, so you're going to go after their business, their livelihood, take away their ability to reach their existing audience, because we have an existing audience. And not only is it still very vibrant and still around, it's growing. Our paid subscribers have grown ever since this whole thing went down because
people
actually want to listen.
Yeah, of course.
They're going over to the behind the paywall instead. They don't want to deal with all this nonsense.
You know what's interesting, though, and I have found this as well, is when this happens, and we see it now, I mean, it's not just you, and it's we see it with Tucker Carlson, we see it with everybody, Bill Maher, whomever, like the people that do it, they don't even really care what we're saying. They just want the satisfaction of winning, and then they just move on to the next thing. It's not like they say, oh, great, we got Mike Boudet, great, it's over. We're so happy to get rid of this guy, and now everything's going to be better. They're like, good, all right, we got our kill, let's move on to the next kill. That's just, I mean, that's it. And what what is really gained? Like, what is, so now you don't do sword and scale anymore. Great. Like, now what has changed? Like, what's been accomplished?
Right.
You know,
right.
I don't get it. I just, it's baffling to me to want to limit free speech. I've never, ever, ever understood. And we'll get to some of the stuff that you've said that's led to these controversies, I guess. But the desire for people, especially like liberals who have been living on free speech for years, and that's sort of been the liberal ideology forever, except when it's something they don't want to hear, and then they start firing away.
It's a power trip a lot of the time. It's like, look what we can do. We can do this. And now that we know that we can do it, let's go after the next target and the next. And then it's almost like, I think Joe Rogan said this on his podcast. He's like, there has to be a path of redemption to someone that's maybe been accused of wrong think or wrong speak and said something that maybe they've changed their mind over time and now they regret and maybe they, you know, but there isn't. It's almost like disposing of people who we see as the enemy and continuing to look for new enemies, new villains that we can attack and dispose of, because it is this sort of power trip, power rush that, like you say, the left has.
I don't think it's no coincidence. Like, I just think it's so much misplaced rage from that side about Trump winning that they don't know what to do with it. And, like, you know, I think if Hillary Clinton had won the election, you'd still be doing Sword and Scale on Wondery, and I'd still be doing my radio show. Like, I totally believe that.
I could see that. Yeah, I could see that. There are a lot of people, for example, this Aaron Mankey and Rabia Chaudhry.
These are the people, right, the undisclosed and lore, yeah.
Undisclosed and lore. I don't know how they actually put out a podcast, because they're on Twitter posting tweets every 20 minutes, every single day about Trump and about how much, you know, how liberal they are and how much they stand for. It's virtue signaling. It's basically all day long virtue signaling about liberal ideology. And it shows through in their SJW way of thinking, their social justice warrior way of thinking.
I just don't get, I think the power trip is a big part of it. And I think they like getting that win and then moving on to the next thing. But, you know, like, so I disagree with a shitload of people, as I know you do on Twitter and on social media. The idea of me ever being like, you know what I'm going to do to this person who I don't like, who has a podcast or has a radio show or has a TV show, is I'm going to find out who the advertisers are. I'm going to listen to a whole radio show for a day or listen to a podcast for a couple of weeks. Find the advertisers for that, and then begin cold calling and encouraging others to cold call until they stop advertising for something that I can just fucking flick the channel or turn off a podcast or turn off the television or do whatever or not go to a movie it's so fucked. I don't even, and obviously I get angry about it because it affected me personally, but I can't reconcile that line of thinking. It's like, imagine if you, like, you know, some of you disagree with politically and they went on there on some TV show and, like, you watched Modern Family, say it was whatever, Julie Bowen, and you saw the Tide advertised for them. Imagine, like, calling people a Tide all day and being like, you know, Julie Bowen hates Donald Trump and I like him, so I don't want you to advertise. It's just fucked up. It's so dumb.
But there's two, I've noticed there's two layers to this, and it is recreational outrage.
Totally. That's right. It's a good phrase.
But there's those that are like the pros, like in any sport, really, like in any hobby. There's those that are really the pros.
Yeah, I dealt with a pro. Yeah, yeah.
They're the ones that really go out there and look for the dirt, and like will listen to 143 episodes of your podcast to look for the things that they didn't like about what you said.
And will be highly disciplined in calling and calling and calling.
Yeah.
And calling
and continuously trolling over the span of years, which I have the same trolls over the span of the last 3 years.
Right.
But then there's sort of like the softer side of that, the more recreational troll mob, which is pretty dumb. Let's face it; they don't really actually do any of the own looking up of anything.
They just
they
fall
get their information
they just fall
from places
their,
like Reddit and Tumblr, and they take it as fact. They'll take something they saw on Twitter and just completely accept it as fact because it's from someone that fits their ideology and their ideas of how the world should work. And so there's a lot of things that get said about people that are complete bullshit.
Well, so you said in that sort of farewell thing on Sword and Scale that there were things that were taken out of context to make you look like a misogynist pig.
Completely.
Like, so go ahead. So give me an example or two, because, you know, I dealt with it too, and I've seen the Boston Globe has written editorials about me. They've taken things out of context. I mean, you could take, you know, when you talk about things that are sort of third rail, and you talk about, you could take anything out of context and make anybody look like anything. That I completely believe and have experienced. So I'd be curious to hear what happened with you.
For example, I'm someone that believes in equal rights for everyone, both, you know, male, female, anybody in the LGBT community. Mm-hmm. But there's this sort of new wave feminism of women that are trying to not only tell everyone else how to think, but women, other women themselves, but, you know, how they should behave and what they should accept. And you can't argue with them, because if you argue with them as a man, you're suddenly a misogynist. You're mean to your fans, quote unquote. You know, there's all these things that people say about me that, you know, that I'm a dick to women, or that I'm a misogynist.
Right. So I see a lot of that when I read, when I do Google searches about you now. It's A, the podcast is gone, and B, you know, you're a dick. You called Juliana Pinto fat. You said that, you know, so back me up on that story. You know, she said she was a fan of yours, and she said, yes, "Hey, when you're when I die, I want you to cover me on Sword and Scale," right? And then you tweeted.
She tweeted that. Yeah. She tweeted that about a year ago.
And you quote tweeted back.
I just wrote back something I thought was funny at the time, which is, and she died of a high cholesterol diet and mild heart disease.
Right. Well, that was your tweet. That didn't actually happen to her. That was your tweet
right.
back to her. Right.
You're right. It was just a tweet that I wrote. I thought it would be funny.
Right.
But those are two things that people die of all the time in the United States.
Sure.
I didn't think at the time, it didn't cross my mind that perhaps that was a fat joke as well.
Right. But of course, you do that. That is ammunition for them to go crazy and jump up and down and say that you shouldn't have a job, right?
Well, it started almost immediately. That was sort of the beginning of the boycott talk. Immediately, one of these people that follows my Twitter and hates my guts, but still follows my Twitter and everything everything I ever do.
Yeah, you get that.
They took that tweet. They put it next to a picture of her profile, which I hadn't even seen at the time. And she's a heavier set girl.
Ooh.
And they basically immediately started accusing me of fat shaming. They got this whole mob, an avalanche beginning to occur of just accusing me of this and that before I even had a chance to respond. And it started almost immediately. The calls for boycott started almost immediately at that point. And then this is just an extension of it a year later.
Well, I think once the ball gets rolling on that, like the boycott stuff, it's hard. It's like you can't push it back uphill. You know, it's just the way the way society is now. You can't do it.
You can just watch it happen, really. It's almost like a disaster in slow motion. You see it, and there's nothing you can do about it.
So what is that? Like, how quickly do you know at that point that you're kind of fucked?
Well, I got a text almost immediately from Wondery, because they immediately started texting Wondery or tweeting at Wondery, messaging them that I was fat shaming, all this and that. And I had to actually issue an apology. They weren't satisfied with that, so I had to issue a second apology, which made me look even worse.
I've done that. Not great. Yep.
It comes across as you didn't mean the first one, or right. You didn't mean the second one. Which one did you not mean?
Right.
You know, it's just ridiculous. It's all about, here's what it is. And I've noticed this because I listen to Howard Stern. I've been in this whole, you know, I'm a big fan of Opie and Anthony. Mm-hmm. And I've followed this whole thing since it started, where there's a sort of process that they keep talking about. First of all, they get you to apologize, and as soon as you apologize,
they kill you for the
they fire
right,
you.
Right. It's true. And by the way, you apologize, as I have in the past, and the people who hate you call you out because the apology they want you to give, they feel was bullshit. And by the way, they're right. They want you to give an apology. You give it. You give them what they want, and they're mad at you for giving them the apology that they want. It's unwinnable.
They rate your apology.
Yeah.
I don't think he was sincere.
And you know what? And most of the time, you're right. You know what? You're right. I wasn't fucking sincere. I wasn't. But you wanted me to do it. My bosses wanted me to do it. What the fuck am I supposed to do? Like, what, you know?
Because you can't just say, no, you're wrong. That's not what happened. This is what happened. And this is how I feel about it. No, that's not okay. You have to apologize. You have to say mea culpa. You know, they have to shame you, almost like Game of Thrones with the walk down the corridor naked. You know, they have to basically embarrass you and make you because they want, it's a superiority thing. It's almost like a power trip. And they really want to get you down, and so then they can kick you again and then get you fired.
So at that so at that point, you do that. Wondery want you doing all that. So that's what, about a year ago?
Yeah, that was almost exactly a year ago.
So
yeah.
Do you know at that point, if I said to you, like, a year from now, will you still be doing Sword and Scale a year ago, would you have probably said no or no?
I knew that, I guess. Yeah, I knew Wondery. I knew the Wondery relationship was almost immediately at that point was going to be an issue, because that the fact that now you have someone to go to complain and get me in trouble.
Yeah, once that's open, right.
That's a problem. I mean, I had been doing this thing by myself for 3 years before I even got in touch with Wondery. 3.5 years before I even talked to them, and so once it was out there that I was part of this network that had started to become pretty big and started to make a name for itself. I think it's like the third biggest podcast network now.
Were you making real money at this point? Like real money?
Yeah. The podcast industry has exploded since I started. I mean, it was nothing back then. And now it's just, like I said, there's a new true crime show coming out almost every single day. It's a huge industry.
So how does it end? Like, how does this all, like, what's the next, you know, is this the C word thing? Is that the thing that ended it, or?
Well, yeah, that was an Instagram post. And we have an Instagram page, or we had an Instagram page, for Sword and Scale, which, you know, like I said, we tell some of the most horrible murder stories that you can imagine, with all sorts of things, dismemberment, cannibalism. And so the Instagram page is, you know, if you know the format of Instagram, it's you post pictures. We're not going to post pictures of dismemberment. We're going to post funny memes that are cute or that have something to do with murder, but it's sort of it's a place for more of a lighthearted look at what we're doing here, and there's a lot of people out there that listen to the show. They like to delve into the dark, true topics, but they also have a sense of humor about the world, and not everything has to be serious all the time.
Well, sure, there becomes, like, you know, a communal vibe between the listener and the podcast host as it grows. I mean, that's just, you know, you have little inside jokes, you have this, you have that. That happens. That I get.
And we've had, and if you look at pretty much any Facebook group or Instagram page of any other murder podcast, it's pretty much the same thing. It's a bunch of memes. It's a bunch of murder memes. So I posted a meme, which I ran across on another Facebook true crime group that I don't know if you want me to say what it was.
Sure, you can say it.
Okay, so it was basically a white font on a black background, and it said, I don't understand dumb cunts. Maybe I should take one home and take it apart to see how it works. And it's first of all, it's a meme that I didn't write. I found.
Right.
I thought it was funny. The joke there is obviously it's not about violence towards women. It's about when you're a kid, you take things apart to see how they work. It's sort of like a little bit of an innocent throwback to that. It's also a little bit of a jab to people that act like assholes out there. And the word cunt is also used as an insult to what you would consider an idiot throughout the world.
But I would say, I'll just play devil's advocate here. Like, and I am not, listen, I am all for say whatever you want, write whatever you want, free speech. If you don't like it, don't listen to your podcast, unsubscribe, whatever the fuck you want. But I could see where you've already gotten in some hot water. You work for Wondery. I could see on that one, that word is a total, like, you know, women get very worked up about that word. It does have a whiff of sort of anti-feminism. I could see how that spun that way. Should you, at that point, maybe have said, if I want to continue this relationship, is the smartest thing in the world do the post this? Probably not, right?
Right. Yeah. No? Of course, if you tell me not to do something, that's when I want to do it.
Sure, I'm the same. And I'm the exact same way. But I'm saying, when you do post something like that, and I've done the same thing where I've basically told my bosses, like, you know, just fuck off. Like, you are basically saying at that point, I don't really want to have this relationship anymore, right? Or no?
I guess.
Do you think so?
I mean, I didn't do it with that frame of mind.
Well, maybe not, you know, but maybe subconsciously you did. You know what I mean?
I guess, I mean, from my point of view, when this all started, and I would start, you know, basically I would dread getting a phone call from Wondery, because
sure,
that meant that suddenly
good.
Someone on the internet
right.
found something wrong with something I said or did, and now I'm going to get a complaint about it, and they're going to tell me to tone it down or to do.
Totally.
And it's always an unpleasant conversation.
It's never good. Yeah, you get that sick pit in your stomach when you see the phone ring, the number. You're like, oh
yeah.
shit, here we go
yeah.
again. This guy or your case did this, did that. This person's dropping out, and you get so mad. And so irrationally angry, and you have less than zero control over it. None. No control.
And here's the thing I said to them at one point, and it was not too long before this happened, which was, you know, I didn't spend all this time and all this effort and you know, years of working towards this goal to be silenced. I did this so I could have a voice, not so I could get my voice taken away. So if I want to post something or I want to say something, I'm going to say it. I'm going to post it. And, you know, that's just what's going to happen, because how do you become a podcaster with a million listeners and then suddenly you can't say anything? You have to be careful about every word you say because someone's going to get upset. And I have a problem with that whole philosophy of now you have to pretend. Now you have to basically think about every little thing because someone somewhere may be upset about it.
Sure, but I would say, but like you have to at least acknowledge, and I agree with you. And like I said, I wouldn't, you know, my world, if you worked for me, I'd let you post what you wanted and let the chips fall where they may. And if people bail, they bail. But, you know, when you post something where you see we use the word cunt, like, you know, that you are inviting trouble, fair or unfair. I mean, you're a smart guy. You know that's going to happen.
I thought things like that could happen or would happen.
Right.
I didn't know they were going to take it to the extent of getting me kicked off of the network.
Right. So that happens. So that gets posted, and that sort of kicks off the final. You know, we're finally at the end here, like where they just say we're not going to work with you anymore, right?
Pretty much. It was a two-stage process. I think the first part, I got a call and someone said, "Why did you post that? What were you thinking?" And I was thinking, fuck censorship. That's what I was thinking.
Okay.
And then they were like, please take it down, please, you know, whatever. And I took it down. And then a little while later, I got another call, and they're like, we're gonna have to sever ties here. And that, I was at that point like, what are you fucking kidding me? We just talked, and everything was fine. But apparently, you know, I guess there's a couple of social justice warriors that actually work at the company, and thought that tweet was somehow a violent, inciting violence towards women within Wondery, and so they got very upset about it, and so they went to management in the company, and they were the ones that instigated me getting
I can't say I'm surprised. Like, at that point, when you tweet something or message, you know, a meme like that, I'm not surprised. Again, I wouldn't fire you, but I can just see how it happens, and then it's over. And like, is part of you like almost relieved when it's done, though, where you're like, okay, good, I don't have to worry about this part of it anymore. I can just do what I want.
Part of me started laughing because when I thought about what Aaron Mankey from Lore and Rabia Chaudhry from Undisclosed had done, and the fact that it actually had worked, and I thought to myself, well, now that I don't have a job and I don't have anything to lose, what do you think's going to happen? Do you think I'm just going to kind of go away off into the sunset and disappear and nobody's going to hear from me again? No, that's not what's going to happen. I'm going to let everyone in the fucking world know what you did and why you did it and how petty it was. And I'm going to stand, you know, start talking even louder about this sort of nonsense, this sort of bullshit mob outrage culture that we're living in. And so that's exactly what I've been doing now for a few weeks. I've been going on many, many different interviews, talking to a lot of different people, because I think that we all have to kind of collectively at some point say enough of this. This is not appropriate.
I just don't know, and I obviously agree 1,000%. I just don't know what that tipping point is. I don't know when it happens when people just say, well, wait a minute, this is fucking nuts. Like, this doesn't make any sense. People are, you know, free speech is gone. There's this culture war going on, and who's winning out of this? Like, what's the win? I don't know what moment happens in society where people say, hey, we got to go back the other way. But, I mean, you're right. I mean, it has to happen at some point. It has to.
Yeah, there's a lot of people already doing it. They're
just
not doing it vocally.
Right. It's scary. It's hard to do.
that may be one of the reasons why Trump won the election, because everybody on the left thought he was done for when he said, you know, grab her by the pussy. They were like, okay, we're done. He's out. There's no way he's going to be president. And people were like, we're not just going to go for your PC bullshit. We're going to elect the guy we want to elect anyway. So it's sort of already happened.
When you say pettiness, like, what is the one or two moments dealing with these two people in particular in sort of the group they led that you look back on and say, Jesus, that's that. When I think about it, when I go over the story in my head, those are the things that piss me off the most.
You know, I had no problem with Rabia at all. I had never spoken to her. She was at the same conference I was at one time. There was just nothing. There's no bad blood at all. And in October of last year, I posted a tweet that I thought Adnan Syed had killed his girlfriend.
Yes, I believe that. I believe that too. By the way,
that's the whole serial, the background behind the whole serial story. And I think, she's somehow related to him. Like, I don't know. She's somehow friend of the family.
Right.
She came after me with such vitriol after that one tweet. She basically took her entire fan base. I think there's 100,000 people that follow her on Twitter, and told them, okay, you know what to do. Go get them. Which, if you think about how dangerous and irresponsible that is, to have 100,000 people that you don't know and then basically sick them on someone, there's going to be 1% of that population, just like there is 1% of the population in the general population, that are mentally unhinged, that are unstable. And I was going basically on a meetup tour at the time, going from city to city, cities I'd never been to before, to meet with fans in like hotel bars and hanging out and, you know, talking about murder stuff. And for me to now start thinking that one of these crazed fans from her side may decide to show up at one of these meetups, which has no security, you know, anybody could come walk right up to me and do whatever they want. And I thought, that is the most irresponsible, ridiculous behavior I've ever seen, and dangerous. And there's no thought into it. It's just like, I'm right, you're wrong, fuck you. And that's where it started. And then Aaron Mankey was basically right on top of that, you know, doing the same behavior and praising her for that sort of behavior. On top of that, she went out and talked to every podcast conference because the two of them basically go from podcast conference to podcast conference. They like to be like the big dog. They like to be looked up to. And so they went to all of the promoters of all of these shows and basically said, we don't want you to ever invite Mike Boudet to one of these conferences, or we'll never do one of your conferences again. They blacklisted me off of the entire podcast conference network.
Yeah, that's, you know, it's not surprising. The other thing about the people I've dealt with in this world is, in that, you know, I've dealt with a million of these, is when you ask them to come on and have a conversation, a debate about it, they never want to do it, ever.
No.
They'll never do it. I'm happy to do it on their form, too. I don't care. But they never want to have a debate. You know, they're free. They claim to be First Amendment, free speech, liberal, da da da. But when it comes down to having an actual conversation, I have my facts, you have yours. Let's lay them out. They want no part of it, none.
The other part of that too, I would say, they pretend to be these caring individuals about society and about the marginalized and about how much they care about these groups and these things and these causes, and virtue signal about it constantly every day. But they're the first ones to become extraordinarily nasty when there's someone that maybe doesn't fully agree with them,
right?
And they become vicious, just inhumanly nasty people.
And they hate Trump, which is fine. I don't care. They hate Trump because he, you know, is not open-minded, closed-minded. You know, they say that he's this and that. Meanwhile, these people have less diversity of thought in the most closed minds you've ever dealt with in your lives. The idea that they'd be like, I'm open to hearing the other side all day long. Bring it to me. Let me hear it. These people never, ever want to hear that side ever. They don't want to consider it. There's no thought given to it. They have their ideas. You're a misogynist. You're a racist. You're homophobic. You're anti-trans.
Right.
You know, everything. But wait a minute. But actually, I'm not. And here's why. I don't want to hear it. Fuck you. We want to get you fired. We'll move on to somebody else. Get them fired. Move on, move on, move on. So I'm sure these people now are go ahead.
When they can't win an argument, when they can't win a logical argument about a topic, they go after the individual and they attack the individual to discredit them so that they could feel like they're morally superior, their argument is better.
And what is one? What's one? Like, what do you win? That's why I always want the person who did this to me, I've always wanted to have him on the podcast or talk to him. I always just want to ask him, what have you accomplished? Like, what have you done? Like, what has changed in the? I don't know.
Yeah.
So now you're What is the future for you? Like, what are you doing now? What's the next few months look like now that you're kind of on your own?
Well, I'm still hosting the show Behind the Paywall on Patreon.
Okay, you go to Patreon to get that. Yeah.
Yeah, and so we're working on that. We have a new host, Trisha Griffith, that does the regular live show. We're trying to see if we can coax some advertisers back to that freely available show with her hosting. Mm-hmm. And in the meantime, we're just continuing to do what we do. We have a few other podcasts. This is War, Monstro, and Sword and Scale Rewind, which we put out. And so we're just trying to keep everything afloat, continue paying our employees right now with just Patreon revenue until we try to get more advertisers on board. And we'll see how long that lasts. I mean, if we can't get anybody on board, those shows may eventually go away.
And how's Patreon? It's been successful so far?
Yeah, Patreon is doing great. We have, almost 16,000 supporters on Patreon, and we're switching to our own platform, too, because that's another thing we noticed. Once this whole controversy started and they went after Wondery and they went after our advertisers, they also went after Patreon, and they tried to get Patreon to kick us off of the platform because, just losing all of your ad support isn't enough. They need to basically remove all of your livelihood.
Just wipe you off the earth completely, right.
Yeah, and Patreon has been sort of under some controversy for doing just that, for basically banning creators because they maybe said an inappropriate word on a different platform altogether, not even on Patreon, but on a different platform and in the past, which makes it very scary. So we've been working on building our own platform so that we can completely get off of anyone else's platform and not have the ability of anyone to go after a boss or some corporate entity that they
Is that the future, Mike? I mean, ultimately for guys like people who have opinions, guys and girls and whoever who have opinions and have to say things and want to have conversations and be compelling. I mean, 15, 20 years from now, not even 5 years from now, that's going to be the future for all of us, I think, is a place where we're going to have to govern it or own it ourselves, I think.
I'm looking, one of the things that I'm a big fan of are cryptocurrencies, and one of the things that that cryptocurrencies allow you to do with the blockchain technology and all of that is to, first of all, put up things that are pseudonymous or anonymous, and they stay there forever. No one can ever take them down. They sort of become permanent and ingrained into the structure of the internet. So in the future, I think the basic core of the internet will be permanent and also much more anonymous. So there's a little bit of hope for free speech. Unfortunately, I think still putting your name on something can be very dangerous because you may change your mind in the future, and in the future it may become completely inappropriate to say a certain word, which today
is appropriate.
Totally fine.
Of course. Yeah, absolutely. Of course. Any regrets at all?
I mean, if I were smart, I would take a time machine back maybe 3-4 years ago and cater to the masses and probably be making just a shitload more money than I am now. But I don't think I do. I don't think I would want to take that route regardless of everything I know today.
All right. Well, Mike Boudet, again, Sword and Scale. Go to Patreon. You can find all the stuff there. And I appreciate you coming on and telling your story. I know it's not been an easy couple of years for you, but I do appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
All right, Mike, I'll talk to you soon. Thanks so much.
Okay.
All right, man.
All right.
Thanks.
Bye.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.